When my desk is out of order, I am constantly making discoveries. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you Thought for Today. When my desk is out of order, I am constantly making discoveries. We were talking about illumination this morning. And making discoveries is what illumination is all about. Everyone here in the university and at the monastery and the campus and so forth, everyone who is taking our courses is taking the courses because they want spiritual illumination. They want to understand that inner light that they may have seen or may not have seen, but they want to understand that inner light. No. They want to understand that inner light. They want to have a little more enthusiasm in my talk. okay, we'll give it to you. They want to understand that inner light. And how do they understand the inner light? They understand the inner light by getting a glimpse of it at any point in their life. Now, all of you have had a glimpse of your inner light at one point or another. And see, here's my scope. So all of you have your inner light at one point in your life, and you have seen it, and you have felt it. That's the reason that you're pursuing it. If you had never had a glimpse of your inner light, you would never try to follow it, you know, find it, because you would have no idea what the inner light meant. You'd have no idea what illumination meant. You would be working on a blank slate. You'd have nothing to go by. Nothing for comparison, nothing for understanding and at all. Now, you have had this illumination a number of times. Now, you say, well, when did I ever have illumination? Well, you had illumination every time that little light bulb goes off or goes on in your head and says, ah, so. You say, that's sort of a minor, not a very important illumination. Oh, really? Now you're going to start grading them, huh? Can you say you're a little bit pregnant? Can you say there's a little tiny light, but it's not a very big light, so therefore it's not important light? You take a little candle. I go by Ellen's suite every morning while she's up there doing her 3-hour meditation. And I see her candle burning. This morning I saw it go on and then go off and so forth. And I thought to myself, light goes on. I wonder what's all going on in there. Must be some sort of a strange affair going on in there. But one little tiny light that is a candlelight or even a little flashlight. My little flashlights are as illuminating for my path at night as the big flashlights. The big flashlights make a lot more light, but they don't illuminate the path any better. If you say, well, they certainly do, because you can see the path more completely. Well, that's true. But think of this. What is illumination all about? Illumination is going to the light, right? At least we think of this. It's going to that focus that has brought our attention to it. Illumen means light, okay? Okay, if illumen means light and illumination means you are aware of the light, then if you're aware of any little tiny bit of light and you think that's wonderful and you follow it, then that's great. And then the light gets a little brighter. And what's the first thing that happens when the light gets a little brighter? You see more. You're distracted. You're looking at all sorts of things around you and you're saying, that's not good, that's good, that's wonderful, that's not wonderful. You're making judgments and you're looking at everything in life. And you're distracted, and the light gets brighter, like the sun comes out. And then you can see the whole earth, and you're distracted by the whole earth. You don't look up at the sun anymore. You're afraid the sun is so bright, you might burn your eyes, and you would if you looked at it for any length of time. So, what's the next step? The next step is you. The next step is how bright are you? how illumined are you? See, here we are, we say, when my desk is out of order, I'm constantly making new discoveries. When my desk is out of order, I'm constantly making new discoveries. Now, when the light goes on, you're constantly making new discoveries. The brighter the light, the more you can see. And you keep upping the wattage of the light until all of a sudden you start not seeing again, remember? When the light gets extremely bright, things begin to fade. Not that they don't exist anymore, but they begin to fade. Because the bright light presumes your attention. And it grows larger, or not larger necessarily, but brighter and brighter, until there's nothing out there except the light. Well, as you're walking your spiritual path, and you keep using your little battery-operated flashlight, and you see a little here and a little there, and then you see things around it, and you're always looking for the path. You see, if you're walking at night, and if you're walking by the light of a flashlight, if you would look at the light, you wouldn't need to worry about the path, because you let your own inner light shine, and your own inner light would illumine whatever your path is, and you don't need to see it. Your feet are guided to go to the right place and do the right thing. You're shown the way. I was looking at the stars this morning, and I was thinking, boy, Columbus must have been pretty bright, and all the seamen who sailed ships by starlight, and not starlight, but by the star positions. And I looked at the North Star, and I thought, gee, that's not a heck of a big star. The tip of the Big Dipper points right to the North Star, which is just like a half mile to the right of our tower over here, the Naval Tower. And the North Star is always there. But the Big Dipper is making its cycle around the Earth. It's making its cycle in the sky. Actually, the Earth is making the cycle, but the Big Dipper appears at different locations. And sometimes you can't see the Big Dipper at all. But if you had the ability to look at the North Star and see only the North Star, what would happen to the North Star? For you, the North Star would become more and more brilliant. And as the North Star becomes more and more brilliant, you are illumined by what you see. And you see it, and you know what's going on so beautifully. Now, if you want to experience illumination, truly your desk is out of order. You're looking at everything in the world here. You're distracted by everything in the outer. And you're constantly making discoveries. You're finding that there are beautiful things in this world too, besides the leaves that are falling on the street and the sidewalk. You're finding beautiful things in this world besides the tree that had fallen down, or a car that crashed, or people who are having unhappy home lives and relationships. You find that there is something beautiful in life. Now, where is that something that's beautiful in life? You are making the biggest error of your life by thinking the beautiful things come from out there in here. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You all think that. You all think that. Ingeborg was making toast this morning, and Ellen thought she'd give her a little warning. Don't make it too brown. You know, with those raisins in there, you'll burn them, and it won't be very good. And so Ingeborg took out the toast that she was making, and she showed it to Ellen. It was hardly even brown yet. Now, Ellen had an illumination there, and the illumination was shut up. Let her do what she wants to do. If she messes up her toast, she'll learn by it, and maybe she won't do it the next time. Or maybe you might even say she's not going to mess up her toast. She's going to make it perfectly in order. Now, all of those would be illuminations. Some of those illuminations would be worldly illuminations in a limited way, but you're aiming toward the more spiritual illumination when you say, hey, get my nose out of somebody else's business. Stop trying to run what they're doing. If they destroy it, we'll just buy a new one. If they mess this up, we'll just buy another one. If they do that, we just buy another one. If they burn the house down, we just build another one. And yeah, you laugh, but that's not an intelligent thing to do. Your mind should not even conceive of that. You should not even have it anywhere in your consciousness. If I put it there or anyone else. Recently, there were fires nearby here, 30 miles away, that burned up a great many acres and homes here in Southern California. And every time people call us on the phone or talk to us or write to us, they say, how was the fire? You know, how was the fire? Well, the fire was just fine. I mean, it burned and did its thing. But how was it affecting us? It wasn't near us. But, well, you say it burned just fine. That was not what the people whose homes were burned would say. Yes, they would. Because nothing happens by chance. Well, what do you mean? Nothing happens by chance. Now, people don't like you when you say that. Because then they must take responsibility for what they did. But did they wrap their home in the pure white light of love? Or did they say, oh my God, my home's going to get burned up, my home's going to get burned up. And sure enough, their home got burned up. There was one home in the center of a circle of homes in the center. And it got burned to the ground. And the homes in the outer circle, not more than a yard away, were untouched. Untouched. Now, why is that possible? Why is that possible? Well, the people who were in the circle of homes apparently said, I surround my home with my pure white light of love. All is in divine order. And the person whose home was burned down undoubtedly said, oh, my home's going to burn. It's going to burn. Oh, dear. You know. Now you say, where is illumination? Where are those discoveries I'm making by moving the things around on my desk? My mind is my desk. And it's cluttered up with a whole lot of interesting ideas and thoughts. And we want to take every one of those thoughts one by one and clean them up and put them in order. Well, that's a totally impossible job. So we don't do that. What we do is we put a new cause in motion. What is that new cause that we put in motion? The new cause we put in motion is all is in divine order in everywhere of our life. But I want illumination. I want this and I want that and I want... Oh, fine, then go to some school that teaches that. I teach, speak the principle, and everything follows. Seek ye first all things, and the kingdom of God will be added unto you. This is what most people think. This is what you think. Every one of you here is thinking that. What should I work on to get spiritual illumination? How should I accomplish spiritual illumination? How I haven't got it now in the last 3,000 years I've been working on it. What's the matter with me? What's the matter with the program? Maybe there's some program on the face of the earth that teaches it. Yeah, ours. Yeah, ours. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things shall be added unto you. Now the kingdom of God is all is in divine order. Simple. Simple. All is in divine order. Nothing else. And then all things are taken care of. All things are in divine order. If all is in divine order now, then all things are in divine order. There's nothing you have to do. And if you're going to go kneeling and crawling up to the cross and up the staircase, we got a good staircase you could kneel and crawl up, you know. But it's better for your feet than for the knees, I tell you. But it's whatever you feel is necessary. And people still today, flagellate their bodies. They whip their bodies and they like to draw blood, you know. We saw this movie last night about this whale rider, and charming movie. The young girl is very sensitive and very aware. And the boys who were training to be kings had to take their shirts off. Here they were 12, 14 years old. And then they had to pound their chest. And their teacher, who was one of the elders, he said, and you have to draw blood when you pound your chest. You have to scrape yourself. Well, the boys didn't feel like doing that. But they hit their chest and they acted all proper and angry and so forth. And the teacher said, oh, you're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. But you see, you don't have to do that to achieve it. That girl was in tune. That girl got the message. Quite likely she was born a shaman. Wasn't it true? Quite likely she was born a shaman. Her brother, who was born at the same time, her twin, did not survive. And they all thought that the brother should certainly be it. A boy should be the shaman, not a girl. Well, there are many shamans, shaman women. Yeah. And the sex makes no difference. But the big point is, when you have a calling, you have a calling, and it's not all peaches and cream, you know. Because this girl, in her calling, she was not understood. But she had to do what she did because that was the drive in her that said, I will do these things that are important for me to do to demonstrate who I am. And if you said, are you the king? She'd say, certainly not, you know, because that wasn't her thought. But there was this drive in her to cause her to do this that was far beyond anything else. Now, Ellen tells us that when she was a little girl, she wanted to become a priest. And that as she got older, she still wanted to become a priest. And then at one point, she forgot that. Well, now, you tell us about, you told us about the 20-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Who became a nun.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And at the age of 20, she had already decided to become a nun. At the age of 20, she had already decided to become a nun. She had already decided. She had decided early in her life, perhaps when she was just a little tyke, you know, and there was that spiritual illumination that was sparkling through her mind. And she knew that in the outer world, she would only be facing one challenge after the other as she sought to walk her spiritual path. You understand that? Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, she felt that getting into a nunnery was the most desirable situation because she could spend the majority of her time in prayer and meditation, listening and introspection. And so you say, oh, she has a lovely face. Oh, we took pictures of her, and she's got a very round, happy face. Well, God damn it. What do you think they do in these monasteries and in these nunneries? Do you think they all have sex with each other and stuff like that? It sounds like you do. Or they're beat, they're put into cages and stuff like that. My goodness sakes, what a sad attitude you have. The majority of these people, men or women, are there to walk their spiritual path. They're there to spend 99% of their time on their spiritual path. They may fail a little bit here or there, but basically, they're there for their spiritual, and they will not give up. And they will not blame the institution for their unhappiness. Well, I can never go out to the library. I can never go out and walk on the street. I can never go do this or do that. Praise God. You start walking on the street, and then you start taking on the world's problems, and then you start forgetting to take your own circumstances, which is your number one. I would say the nuns and monks of this world, and the shaman and other people who are dedicated their lives, are the most magnificent people on the face of the earth because they have chosen one-pointedly to walk their inner path as distracted, as undistracted as they could possibly be. Now, they're remarkable. They're magnificent type people. You say, well, I've talked to some of them. Some of them aren't that magnificent. Sure. That's right. And don't you ever forget it. The ones that allowed you to talk to them, they had problems. The ones who didn't have the problems didn't talk to you. They didn't need to have outer intercourse. They didn't need to have an outer world to talk to share with as they walked their inner path. They, in quietness, enjoyed what they walked. You'll find that the Thomas Mertons of this world, Thomas Merton is the monk who writes books on his monasteries and so forth. Fantastic fellow. Fantastic, amazing mind, brilliant relative human being. A great guy, but very brilliant. And what does he spend most of his time doing? Like St. Thomas of Assisi, or no, St.
Thomas of Aquino.
Hmm?
St. Thomas of Aquino.
Well, I'm not. I'm thinking of the Augustinian and Aquinas, Thomas of Aquinas. He spent all his time writing rules for the church, writing rules for the organization, writing rules of Catholicity and so forth. I mean, that's super. I mean, but here you are mundaning it. Oh, these are spiritual rules. No, they aren't. The only spiritual rule is to be yourself and have fun, to walk your inner path, to listen to the divine within you. And I tell you, if you were to take any monastery, I would say perhaps, and this is being very generous, perhaps 10% of the monks and nuns that are there are walking their spiritual path 99% of the time. They don't really care what other people are doing. They're in seclusion. They attend the meals, they do these various things, but they don't attend them as a social gathering. They attend them merely to keep the body and soul together. They do the things that they're asked without one whimper, without one protestation. They do everything that they're asked to do because they're not there to be a rebel. They're not there to be in rebellion against the program. They're there because the program offers them the free time to spend majority of their life in meditation, the majority of their time in life walking their spiritual path and experiencing the inner light. Now, do you see the beatific look on their face? I venture to say that your cousin or your aunt or somebody, who are you talking about? The 20-year-old girl.
Yeah, I know somebody.
See, all right. All right, so this person that she's talking about, this 20-year-old person who dedicated her life to the nunnery at the age of 20, and who looked so beautiful when she was maybe 30 or 40, right? And if you don't know the facts, don't do this, you know.
I really don't.
Say something.
This is a very, and that's a good comment, and you remember it yourself too, invent. But this is a very special group of statements that I'm making here, and they're not necessarily necessary to have Chicago in the middle of New York, you know, but it can be. Now, this person went to the monastery, the nunnery, and she became a nun at 20, and at 30 or 40, she was seen to look glorious. Her face was radiant. And at 50, perhaps, the rules of the monastery were changed, or nunnery, and she was able to go home and visit her family. And at that time, everything in her life changed. She no longer was a spiritually illumined nun. How could that be? Because she allowed herself to be possessed by going to see her family. She allowed herself to need to go out of the nunnery to see the world. She was not so spiritually illumined. She didn't need that at all. I mean, when you reach spiritual illumination, you're not going to be concerned, and Ellen, you know this, you said this yourself, you're not going to be concerned one little bit about what your family is or does or where they are or what's happening with them. Not one little bit. Ellen, you know why? Tell me. You will see them.
Hold in perfect.
My goodness sakes, how long it took that to come out. Yes, you will see them whole and perfect just like you are. You will see them illumined just like you are. They don't need your attention. They don't need your help. You're no longer in charge of their life. You never were, but you're no longer in charge of their life. Now, do you understand what it means to walk the spiritual path? To walk the spiritual path means that there is no other path. That there is no going to the Himalayas, there is no going to Europe, there is no going to Africa to talk to people. If this is part of our program, then it's part of our program. But if you are going to be a person who is 100% after your spiritual illumination, you will spend 100% of your time going inside yourself. And you say, well, what do we have a body for? That's your test. Are you going to have your body control you, or are you going to control your body? Are you going to say, my body does not need food, water, or air, you know? That's a good thing. Now, when you are spiritually illumined, you will have a spiritual body, which you already have. And you will live in that body, and if the world sees you at all, it will only see that perfect self of you, which you are. And it will not be touched by the world about you. Now, you see, Jesus went through these things, and was he touched by the world about him? Oh, that was just part of his show, part of his story, to teach the lessons that he was giving. And he did it very dramatically, very dramatically. And many others, too. Many others, too. At the time that Jesus was doing his job, there were maybe about 2,000 or 3,000 messiahs walking around the countryside, not only there, but up in other countries, too. That's not an unusual thing. Mm-hmm. Not unusual at all. The unusual thing is that once you start on the path, you allow yourself to be distracted, and you are. You are. Every one of you has some major distractions in your life that is utterly destroying you. And I say, good for you. Destroy yourself. Or, if you want me to work with you, then, yeah, sure. If you want me to work with you, then you will just do every single thing that I ask you to do without any judgment about it at all. I will ask you to spend your time in meditation, not thinking about your work, not reading books and not doing these other, but in your own inner self. When I say listen in introspection, I mean listen to the divine in you. It's not my way. It's just the only way you can do it. It's got to be inside yourself. Okay. Then, when you think of anybody else, you see them as a perfect reflection of your thought. And if your thought is garbage, then the person you're looking at is garbage. If your thought is your divine, perfect self, wow, your world is peopled by divine, perfect people. You understand that? And when you will do as I ask you to do, these simple little things, if you will do them, the illumination that you've been having all along will be your central point of focus, and it'll be the only point of focus for you. Nothing else will matter, because as you look outside with your eyes, you will only see yourself, which is what you see now. And what you see now is not what you like. The things outside that you see, the war, the conflicts, the arguments, the unhappiness, are not what you like, you say. You want to see harmony, peace, and joy. How much have you contributed to harmony, peace, and joy in the world? Contributed? What should I do? See it so. See it so. See it in harmony. See it peaceful. See all in divine order. Now, the day that you start strongly on that road and you say, I'm already on it. Sure you are. But the day you start strongly on that road is the day that you will go blind and you will not see a normal, quote-quote, experience ever again. You will see everything through your illumined eyes and everything will be beautiful. And then you will have another great sin that will fall upon you. The sin of unconditional love. Humanity can't stand that. Unconditional love means you love yourself and everything that you see without any special concern. Everything is loved equally. And when you love everything equally, people say, well, I'm your special friend. I'm your special friend. Sure, you're my special friend, and so is the rest of the population, you know. Well, who do you think you are that you can have everybody as your special friend and that you're so superior? Hey, I didn't say that. You want me as a friend? Why? Because I'm inferior? Because I'm not very wonderful? You want me as a friend because you see in me the beautiful qualities that are in yourself? And I see in you those same beautiful qualities that are in me. And this is what it's all about. Now, you want that illumination? Mm-hmm. That's a laugh. If you want that illumination, you will be like this 20-year-old woman who went to the nunnery, and she says, "Here I am. I will follow your rules 100%. I will come in with no preconceived ideas where I have to have certain rights and certain privileges. I'll have to be able to, if I leave this monastery, I got to have my money back, you know." You see, one of my students, Cecilia, she had been a rather bombastic woman. In her youth, she trained in opulence, and she became a concert pianist and known worldwide. And then she got married and had two children, and her husband and the children went with her on her concert tours. And then one day she got tired of the children, so she gave them to her nanny and said, "You know, you can adopt them. You know, they're yours." And what she did with the husband, I have no idea. But then that all fell apart on her, and so she went into a monastery in India. And she went into this nunnery or monastery, whatever it was, and the cardinal said, "You have to give everything you have to the church, you know, or get rid of it somewhere. You cannot have any possession, because that possession will be what will make you want to get out of here at any time when you don't like the program." And so she said, "Nope, I'm free." And so then, after a number of years, she wanted to get out, and she wanted her money back. And the cardinal says, "No." He says, "You are a sick woman. You were told when you came in here that was the case, and now all of a sudden you want to rewrite the rules and get unhappy with us." Well, sorry, that's not the way the ball bounces. And so she did get out, and then she came to me, and she's working with me for a long time, and she's working on her spiritual illumination. She's a brilliant woman, very intelligent. She was 77 at the time she came to me, and a wonderful person. But as with most people that come to work with me, they fall in love with me. And that's a very wonderful thing, because they like what they see. And that's great, except that they're supposed to be falling in love with themselves. And if they fall in love with me, then they're having a problem, because they're looking in the outer, because they should look at the inner. And so after a while, she was so enamored and so possessive and so controlling to tell me when to get up, when to go to bed, what to eat, and what this and that. And I said, hey, no way, you know. And I said, "You're ready to go out on your own now." And so I sent her out on her own. And she was gone for maybe 6 months. And then she found another guru, another person to follow, the traveler. And she was with him till the end of her life, I understand. But you see, if we're going to walk our spiritual path, it's got to be our spiritual path, not somebody else's, not our teachers, not our friends or neighbors, or not people we admire or worship. It's got to be ours. And you say to yourself, "My God, Herb, you said God damn a little while ago. That's a pretty harsh and a pretty strong statement to make." Well, not really, because you're God, and I'm God, and everyone is God. And when we protest too much, we're damning something. We're seeking all things first in order to get into the kingdom of heaven. You all know so many people are trying to buy their way into heaven, buy their way into sainthood, buy their way into some sort of privileged position. And it doesn't work that way. Because the richest people in the world are the people who have found heaven within themselves. And finding it there, they are in heaven. So, if you want to walk your spiritual path, and you want to have your spiritual illumination, your desk is out of order right now. But as you rearrange it, you will find great discoveries there. And the greatest discovery you will find on your desk is you, just waiting to be revealed. You, the perfect spiritual master, the illumined one. And if you ever see me illumined, praise God, I accept. If you ever see me illumined, that's merely because you are illumined. So keep looking. Open your eyes. Be happy. So, my loves, I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.